From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Opera great Jesse Norman has sung on the world's great stages with a power and beauty that brings audiences to tears. Her first stage was church in Augusta, Georgia, when that still meant segregation and Jim Crow. Now she's telling her whole story. This hour on Point, opera legend Jesse Norman. You can join us on air or online, where this conversation is always on. Have you seen, heard Jesse Norman sing? Tell us. We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK, or join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Joining me now from New York is Jesse Norman, acclaimed opera singer. Her many awards include 5 Grammys, the National Medal of Arts, and Kennedy Center honors. Her new book, a memoir, is Stand Up Straight and Sing. You can read an excerpt at our website, onpointradio.org. Jesse Norman, welcome to On Point. It is an honor and just wonderful to have you with us.
Well, you're very kind. Thank you. Lovely to speak with you today.
It's so great to have you. Be good enough to tell us what we're listening to behind us right here. Where was this?
Well, I wish I knew.
This is La Vera Constanza. This is Haydn.
La Vera Constanza of Haydn. Okay.
You've got such a long career. Maybe you don't even know when you sang this particular recording.
Yes, I do know very well, but I couldn't tell you exactly which Haydn opera it was.
Okay.
Sort of not having been warned that's what you were going to do.
That's all right. I guess I'm always curious how a singer with such an enormous legacy like yourself bookmarks all those performances, and whether the sound of one or another that's been recorded necessarily comes back to you, the time, the place, the circumstances, or not necessarily.
Well, it does. Once I know that it's Vera Costanza, and listening a little longer, that would have been clear for me. I can remember, of course, when it was recorded and where we recorded it. We did it in Switzerland with Antoine Dorati, and it was a wonderful occasion because it was in the middle of the summer, and it was wonderful to be on a lake, and I think we were near Geneva, probably in Lausanne, and we were having a wonderful time. It's a big cast.
It sounds just terrific.
Yes.
This story is so wonderful. I come in here with trepidation because I've read your memoir. It's a terrific lyrical telling of a life and a life in the arts.
Oh, thank you.
It's a wonderful read. But boy, do you go after Morley Safer of 60 Minutes, because he went right to Augusta, Georgia, when your understanding was the deal was that's not where 60 Minutes would go when they profiled you, and they did anyway, and you didn't know, and you didn't like it. But you're showing us a lot of Augusta, Georgia here this time.
Oh, yes, of course. I speak about Augusta. That is, of course, my birthplace and where I grew up and all of that. But what I wanted with the 60 Minutes interview was to talk about my professional life, because I know that one can misunderstand so easily going to a person's hometown and talking to people who, want to remember something from the past, but who've come across so many other people, talking to my teachers from the public schools in Augusta, Georgia. Think how many students they've had since I left Augusta.
Yes.
And to go to them, trying to, have a kind of anecdote about something that happened to me.
With the camera crew and all the paraphernalia.
Exactly. It's it's just so embarrassing. And that's exactly what I did not wish to happen. But these television crews seem to do what they want to do almost any time.
Somehow, Jesse Norman, I imagine that those school teachers may well remember you in spite of the years that have passed. I want to talk about Augusta, Georgia, and much more. James Levine, the artistic director, music director for the Metropolitan Opera, for the Met here, writes in an introduction, describes you, and help us out here, he describes you as one of the world's very rare, what he calls, sovereign artists. And I think that's it's beautiful, but what does it mean? I can imagine, how do you take the meaning of that?
Well, I take the meaning of that I am a trained singer with a musical education, which wasn't necessarily the case, let's say, 50, 60 years ago. A lot of our wonderful singers have, of course, have had fabulous voices, but they were not necessarily people that had been educated, as it were, at a conservatory or at a university in music. They probably hadn't studied music literature or music history or piano or other things like that to become actually a well-rounded musician. They had fabulous, wonderful voices that will go on in our and last in our memory forever. But I think that is what Jimmy was meaning to say there.
Jimmy, that's wonderful intimacy. I know you've worked together a lot. He talks about your extremely disciplined singing, but at the same time he writes deeply expressive, lively, spontaneous in response to every detail. Jesse Norman, when I read Sovereign Artist and read your memoir, I imagine something even further beyond the training that you... And I wonder if you feel this, that at a certain point you reach a standing, a reputation, a body of work behind you that gives you a kind of sovereignty in your career, the choices you make, the way you approach the music. You must have won that over time.
Well, I would hope so. I mean, I have been at this for quite a while. I mean, four decades of singing is quite a lot of singing. I lost count of how many performances have been done in that period. But I appreciate what he has said, and it is a very beautiful thing to have anyone say about me, and especially Jimmy. It's just beautiful.
Here's a little more recording from Jesse Norman. This is from Tristan and Isolde, Wagner, of course, a song called Liebe Stadt. Jesse Norman there, singing the final aria, Liebe Stadt, Love, Death, from Wagner's 1859, Tristan and Isolde, with the London Symphony Orchestra. It is so beautiful. Jesse Norman, for those of us who are not trained opera singers, give us a sense of what's going on in your body to produce that wonderful sound. You write about how the whole torso must be engaged.
Well, of course, the whole body is engaged in singing. That is something that a lot of people, I think, do not understand. Mm-hmm. They know where the vocal cords are, more or less, in the body.
Yes.
But they don't understand about the diaphragm and the lung capacity and all of this that has to go into helping the respiratory system to pass that air through the lungs, pass the larynx through the vocal cords to produce a noise. And it really is a very physical undertaking. And a lot of people seem not to understand that and wonder why we're sort of tired after performance of singing for 2 or 3 hours.
Yeah.
And they have no idea of the work that actually goes into producing this noise and that it should look as though it's effortless, but it certainly is not.
There's a wonderful passage in your memoir, Stand Up Straight and Sing, where one of your early teachers is describing to you how each human body of a singer really constitutes a very distinctive instrument, and the dimensions of bone structure and muscling and everything else from the sort of top of the head almost to the tip of the toes makes the particular sound.
Absolutely. Isn't that wonderful? That's what makes everybody's voice different. And the different timbre, the different colors, the different sounds that we make have to do with how we're made on the inside. And that is something that I think is just fabulous about human nature.
So give us a description then, if you would. It's a memoir, after all. What about
your
structure do you see as most key to the particular sound of Jesse Norman?
Well, I think it has to do with the fact that I have a very wide sinus capacity. And I also have a very big throat. And I think that that certainly, I'm sure that that has a great deal to do with how my voice sounds.
I'm looking at your very beautiful face on the cover of this book, and mm-hmm. I see these prominent wide cheekbones. Is that related to your sinus capacity?
Absolutely. Of course, the cheekbones are they are sort of the sinus. The sinuses, mm-hmm. that's exactly where they are, precisely. Coming across the nose, exactly that.
So when you sing, how much is your intention? I want to sound this way or that way. And how much do you understand is baked into your very structure?
Well, you need to understand, of course, that the brain is completely involved in mm-hmm. anything that a muscle or a ligament is doing.
Sure.
So, of course, the brain is in charge of what is actually happening. You're thinking and you would like to produce a certain sound and work in a certain language and in a certain style. But this is all happening in your head and your body is following what your head is dictating.
This is a
I think that is really absolutely delightful.
It is. It's delicious to hear such a great singer describe how it's produced. Jesse Norman has sung all over the world. For presidents and queens. And there's also a story in a new memoir, a very rich story of growing up in Augusta, Georgia. I want to dive into all that. Jesse Norman's new memoir is Stand Up Straight and Sing. Her mother often said exactly that to her. We'll hear about that and much more. Jesse, please stand by in New York City. We'll go out with Widmung here from Schumann. Listeners, you can join us. Have you been lucky enough to hear, see Jesse Norman sing? Where? What? Tell us. 800-423-8255 is our number. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. Tom Ashbrook, this is On Point. We are talking this hour with acclaimed opera singer, icon really, soprano Jesse Norman, African-American daughter of Augusta, Georgia, whose voice and artistry have taken her all over the world. Behind us right there, she's singing, of course, Carmen's famous entrance aria, Habanera, from Bizet's 1875, Carmen. Singing there, Jesse Norman is with the French National Orchestra, conducted by Seiji Ozawa, in 1988, and what beauty it is. Jesse Norman's out with a new memoir about her professional life as an opera singer and more, about her upbringing in Augusta, Georgia. The book is Stand Up Straight and Sing. You can read an excerpt at our website, onpointradio.org. Jesse Norman joins us from New York, and you can join us. Can you picture the journey from Jim Crow segregated South to center stage at the Metropolitan Opera, at operas all over the world? What's your question for Jesse Norman on her craft, her art, her life? 800-423-8255 is our number. 800-423-TALK. Jesse, we have callers for you. Doris in Charlotte, North Carolina. You are on the air, Doris, with Jesse Norman.
Hi, Tom, and hi, Miss Norman.
Hello.
From North Carolina. How are you?
I'm wonderful, thank you. How are you?
To be able to talk to you. God bless you.
Thank you.
You're one of my special persons. I did see you when you came to Columbia, South Carolina, when the Pope came to America.
Yes.
You sang When I Survey the Wondrous Cross.
Oh, that was a while ago, wasn't it?
Right. And so I became just interested in you then. I had heard you, but really you sort of got into my soul. And I've always wanted to be an opera singer, but of course
oh my goodness.
I'm here today. I didn't make it. I'm a science major. I went to Xavier University. I sang in the chorus here when we did the opera, so I was not a music student. So it's always my aspiration. Now, what would you ask me to do in retirement? I want to sort of get into a voice class and sort of do some things. I listen to you. I sort of mimic you. I hear you when I'm singing. And I thank you for giving the information today about what's essential in terms of being able to sing. But the one thing I see, you got the heart and the soul, and you, of course, you got the brain, but all the instruments don't work, and you like your throat and everything else unless that comes together. So I love you, and I'm happy to have met you by this way.
Well, that's very kind of you. Thank you very much.
Doris, may I ask you, I don't know if you're a born and raised daughter of the South, but knowing that Jesse Norman certainly is, having come up in Georgia in the 50s and 60s, what do you think about this enormous discipline journey she's taken? That was still Jim Crow. That was still real segregation, Doris, of course.
Well, when you have the determination to do what you need to do because it's your gift and it's what God has given to you, you can overcome all of those odds. You don't look at those. You look at what your goal is and you're determined. And we also, during that time, I came up a little earlier than that. Mm-hmm. You have parents and you have others. And so you overcome those. Excuse me. And you know what God has created you to be. So you go on to do that. That's what I can say and share. And that's what I see in her.
Doris, I so appreciate your call. Thank you so much. Jesse Norman, Doris acknowledges your wonderful bone structure and all the rest, but she hears the heart and soul in your music. You write specifically about this in your book. You had a deep in the church upbringing.
Yes.
I did too. And many of the songs that you outline in your book are very familiar to me from childhood. But what about that deep in the church childhood and what it has meant for your sense of your art?
Well, it certainly is a great support and was a very nurturing thing for me to experience. Growing up in Augusta, in the segregated South, I grew up in a community of loving people, loving adults. As I always say, all of the adults raised all of the children.
Yes.
And so it was a wonderful and close-knit community where people understood the importance of the church, of course, and the importance of education. I mean, a perfect stranger could ask you about your report card. They all knew when the report cards came out, and they would ask, now, how did you do? Are you still on the dean's list? Is everything still going well? And this kind of interest and support on behalf of complete strangers some of the time, and of course the neighbors and your family and other relatives and so on. It is a wonderful way in which to grow up because you feel comfortable, you feel looked after, you feel the love of these people, and it gives you strength. And it still gives me strength. It gives me strength to remember it, to understand what a privilege that was. To grow up in a situation that could have been much more painful and could have cowered me and could have changed me into something else instead of allowing me and helping me and nourishing me to grow into quite a different person.
I was inspired in your telling of your life story about how that stuck with you. We've got a track here, Jesse Norman, off of your 1991 album. This goes back again, but this is Sacred Songs and Spirituals, and this is one called There's a Man Going Round. And in your book, you tell the story of performing this song while walking through the aisles of a cathedral and unconsciously imitating the way your grandmother used to slowly walk through the church, looking congregants in the eye as she sang. Here you are, 1991, There's a Man Going Round.
There's a man going round.
Jesse Norman from 1991, getting right down to the fundamentals there. Remind us of your grandmother in the church and how that flowed through you. Where was this singing? Was this in France?
This was in Philadelphia.
Philadelphia,
no, this
right.
was in Philadelphia at the Episcopal Cathedral in the year 2000. Mm. And I was there doing actually a performance of my production of Sacred Ellington, which is music that was composed by Duke Ellington. Mm-hmm. And it's all sacred music. He often wrote the words as well as the music. Mm-hmm. And after we had done the performance and the audience still wanted to have another encore,
yes.
I decided, well, I'd sing a spiritual. And I chose this one. And out of protocol and everything that I would normally do on stage, I decided to walk down from the stage and to walk through the cathedral.
Yes.
And it was amazing that after the performance was over and we were sitting together, my brother was having a birthday that day, and we were celebrating his birthday with friends and family. Mm-hmm. And he said to me, "You can't possibly remember that grandmother used to walk around the church on Sunday morning singing her song and greeting her congregation and all the rest of it." I said, "No, I don't remember." He said, "Well, you couldn't have been more than 3 or 4 years old
yeah.
when she did that." And it was really an incredible moment to think that I was doing something that was in its way innate.
Yes.
That I had seen and was stored somewhere in the brain. We're still working out how the brain really functions, aren't
yes,
we?
Yes.
And that this was something that was in my consciousness, and it came to the fore in this wonderful, beautiful cathedral in Philadelphia. Something that I'd never done before in my life.
Absolutely beautiful. Just beautiful. And that pacing of your grandmother from pre-memory still working
yes.
through you. This is just beautiful. Anne in Lexington, Kentucky. Hi, Anne. You're on the air with Jesse Norman. Thank you for calling.
Hi, Tom. Hi, Mrs. Norman.
Hello.
Hi. I'm originally from Paris, France, and you gave me an unforgettable moment in my childhood listening to you in 1989 on the Champs-Élysées on the 200th anniversary of the Bastille Day.
Oh,
and it was a moment where there was a million people on the street and mm-hmm. everybody was silent, just listening to your beautiful voice, and I'll never forget it.
Thank you.
Singing, I think, La Marseillaise there in the Place du Concorde. There's a photograph on the dust jacket of this book, Anne, where I assume, Jesse Norman, that this
yes.
is that time. You're dressed in
that
the tricolor or the French flag, practically.
In performance, absolutely. On that particular day.
How were you, an American, chosen for that? Tremendous honor.
I still wonder that, but I was chosen by President Mitterrand, and he had arranged this a year before the actual bicentenaire, and he'd sent, as I write in the book, a wonderful emissary from his office, Monsieur de Pavillon, and he came to speak with me and to ask me if I would accept this great honor, and of course, I was overwhelmed by this and absolutely said yes right away. And, you know, how shall we do it? And, you know, how does it work? And will I be singing by myself and all the rest of it? And he assured me, when I questioned whether or not President Mitterrand was certain of my country, and he said, yes, President Mitterrand knows for sure that you're an American
yes.
and that you're not from Haiti or
right.
Guadeloupe or
right.
Martinique
right.
or
no, French
any of
connected,
the former
yes.
French colonies.
Yes.
And so I just wanted to make sure that was
let's be clear.
Yeah,
yes.
Because I sing a great deal in France and had certainly up to that point sung very, very often in France and in French and speaking French and all of that. I just want to be certain we weren't confused.
And how do you remember that moment that Anne, our Parisian caller, remember so well of the million on the Champs-Élysées and you with La Marseillaise on your lips?
Well, I remember it because it was absolutely live. A lot of these things nowadays will be done to a track, to playback.
Mm-hmm.
And we were absolutely live. The orchestra was live. The chorus that was behind me was live. And I was singing live as well. We had these brand new microphones that had just come to us from Japan. And we tried them out and they were wonderful. I mean, the microphone was hardly as big as the fingernail on your thumb. Mm. I mean, it was incredibly small.
Yeah, I see it
but
there,
was,
yes.
We were using that. Yes, you can barely see it
yes.
on the costume there. And it was an incredible experience to be in place for the entire parade, knowing that I would only sing at the end, and to any athlete or any performer will tell you that it's very difficult to keep one's energy up when you have to wait, you know, to offer your part in whatever is happening. But it was so exciting. And we had a monitor where we were waiting so that I could see what was happening.
That
so therefore,
crowd.
I was participating, you know, seeing all the crowds and knowing that there were 55 different heads of state there and that the security was, of course, wild. I mean, there were so many people that were being looked after. I mean, in 55 heads of state, I can't imagine how one would take care of all of that.
But you must have to temper your adrenaline somehow so that it doesn't wear you out just with the excitement of the environment as you wait.
Well, no, I wasn't worn out. I was just very excited about it and interested in just sort of staying up and being able to render this hymn, this national anthem at this moment in this history of this country. It was really, when one thinks about it, it was really quite an event. And to keep concentrated on the words to all of the song there, that it, that was my concentration, I can tell you. I said, now, this is not a time to be lax in one's memory. I'm very often saved by the fact that my memory seems to work very, very well all the time. But that was one of the moments when I said, now, this has to work really perfectly, because there will be people that will be reading the Marseillaise as I sing it. And they will be checking to see
they will know.
I've got
they
it right.
Know. Jesse Norman is with us, recalling our caller Anne's shared moment with her there of the 200th anniversary of the French Revolution when she sang the national anthem on the Champs-Élysées in Paris. Mary's calling from Tullahoma, Tennessee. Mary, you're on the air with Madame Norman.
Well, and it's interesting that you guys have been talking about brain development and memory and everything. I'm literally living proof that music can save a child's life.
I'm sure that's true.
As a small child, I was abused both at home and at school. Music saved my life. Had it not been for music and my ability to simply crawl inside that music and be carried elsewhere, I don't know if I'd have made it.
Mary, was it music? But, was it opera music? Was it music like Jesse Norman's?
Oh, yes. Some of my major heroes, Grace Bunbury, Jesse Norman, Leontine, oh, my God, Leontine Price singing Verdi Requiem. I cannot stay dry-eyed when I hear that lady sing. She owns the Verdi Requiem.
And so many other roles, I might add.
Here's one of I taught myself, as a very small child, I taught myself to sing in six different languages.
Oh, my goodness.
To this, well, see, that's just a thing. It carried, when you're going through severe trauma like that, your brain kind of separates from the rest of you as a self-defense measure.
And looked for relief.
My brain, exactly. My brain got otherwise occupied. And that's what kept me sane.
Mary, we're coming up on a break right here, so forgive me. But what about that healing power of music? Your music very much included, Jesse Norman.
Yes.
Have you felt it? Have you seen it, that power?
I've seen it. I've seen people change their ideas. I can see people change the way they feel from listening to music or being at a performance. And I know that music has healing powers. I mean, this is something that's been proven by many people and spoken about more than just by myself. And it is wondrous that music can heal and can change your body chemistry. I mean, there was even a moment that I write about in the book where they were claiming in Beijing, in about, when would that have been, by 1989, that they were doing operations with acupuncture and the Mozart's music, and that they were using no other anesthetic for operations on the human body. And I wanted to see that. I wasn't able to get a visa to get to Beijing to see this, but I was very interested in seeing how this worked because I completely believed it.
Jesse Norman, please,
that it would be possible.
Please stand by, New York. Forgive me. We have a short break right here. The new memoir is Stand Up Straight and Sing. Opera icon Jesse Norman joins us from New York. You can join us as well. What's your question on her personal journey as an African-American from mid-20th century America to the pinnacles of the opera world. 800-423-8255. His eye is on the sparrow here. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. This is On Point. Acclaimed opera singer Jesse Norman there singing America the Beautiful at President Bill Clinton's second inauguration, 1997. It was not her first inaugural performance. She also sang at Ronald Reagan's second, years earlier. Jesse Norman has had an amazing career in opera and beyond. She's out with a new memoir that tells her story from growing up in Augusta, Georgia, to the pinnacles of the opera world. It is Stand Up Straight and Sing. You can read an excerpt at our website, and she joins us from New York today. You can join us as well. What do you hear in this life story, this voice, the voice of Jesse Norman? So many callers for you, Jesse. Linda in Edgefield, South Carolina. Linda, thank you for calling.
Hi, Tom. Hi, Jesse.
Hello.
I just wanted to tell you that I'm not a regular opera goer, but I just happened to be at your debut with the Met.
Oh, wow. Oh my goodness.
What, 1980 was that?
1983.
83, okay.
1983, yes. And I was sitting there. Was it in Atlanta?
It would have been in New York, I guess.
In New York?
I don't know if it traveled, but...
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I remember sitting there and thinking, as you started to sing, I thought, oh my God, who is that?
And now we know.
That was quite a night. Now we know. Absolutely. No, that was quite an evening to make Munn's debut.
It just swept me off my feet. I mean, or out of my seat, as I should say. It was absolutely wonderful. And your recording of Amazing Grace is just incredible.
Oh, thank you.
I enjoy your recordings, but I love your spiritual album. I think it's just wonderful. And your voice just captures me. It is so warm.
Thank you.
Just wonderful. And I thank you for all your hard work.
Well, bless you. That's very kind of you. Thank you.
Linda, thank you for taking us right back to that amazing debut. And you mentioned Amazing Grace. We have some of Jesse Norman singing that. This is with the Royal Philharmonic Orchestra, 1981. It's a story you tell in the book about the background. Many know, many don't about this. Let's listen to you first, just delivering Amazing Grace. Jesse Norman singing Amazing Grace in 1981. As Norman, you tell the story of the composing, the creation of this song, with a special sensitivity to a ship's captain and his, sadly, cargo. Would you mind just relaying the origin of this song for us?
Yes. Well, the words to Amazing Grace, John Newton was a member of the English Navy, and I'm afraid that his job was to transport free people from Africa to become enslaved in England and often in America as well. And on one of these occasions, when he was in mid-sea, there was a tempest at sea. And he thought not only would he lose his life, but he would lose this cargo, and therefore he wouldn't get paid and all of those things that came to his mind. And in that storm inside his own soul, he came up with these words, which, of course, the entire world knows. I tell the story of being in Seoul, singing in South Korea, and we were at the point where we were singing encores, and I had run out of music to sing. We'd done quite a lot that night, and so I invited the audience to sing with me. I said, now I'll sing Amazing Grace, and I'd like you to sing it with me. What? And the sound of thousands of people in South Korea knowing this song and singing it back to me from the audience was something that one remembers always. And when a song is a great song, it lives through all kinds of things and comes out of all kinds of people. That a person that was actually a slave ship's captain,
yes,
would have come up with these words,
you know,
that the world sings. It might be the most popular hymn in the world. I don't know that for a fact.
It certainly is a
close second.
What so moved me was your sensitivity to the rhythm of these words. You describe
maybe
literally feeling, hearing the murmur of the slaves beneath deck, inspiring
absolutely
the cadence and rhythm of the words that came to him.
Oh, for sure. Because so much of music, particularly from West Africa, is in what we call 3/4 time, and that is called common meter. And so it is not surprising to me that the cadence and the phrasing of this particular verse, these verses that he wrote, would have taken on something that he probably heard, not consciously listening to it. But, of course, people that are in the bottom of a ship are going to do something to try to remove themselves mentally from their situation. So I'm not surprised that there would have been singing and as much music making as one could manage under such circumstances.
And
it is an incredible irony.
And maybe in that part of the power as well of this hymn, perhaps more famous than any other, this spiritual.
Yes, yes.
Martin in Ontario, Canada. Martin, you're on the air with Jesse Norman.
Hello. Hello, Mr.
Hello.
Norman. I'm a very lucky man because I'm just 6 months younger than you, and I found out about you as a singer when I was a young man. I read an article in the Montreal Star saying that there was Jesse Norman, and she was singing, I guess it was with the Montreal Symphony, and she was one of the greatest voices of the 20th century. She was sure to be. And I got a ticket to the second concert, and I went, and I became a fan instantaneously.
Thank
and
you.
I heard you sing many, many times, mostly in Montreal and New York. I was in the opera, as Sieglinde above all, I absolutely loved, Ariadne, Amelia Marti. And many times in the concert hall, I have to say that in my life, one of the greatest moments, which I experienced many times, was to see you walk out on the stage. Earlier, it was said on the program that you had sung before Queens, but you were the queen of them all. When you walked out on the stage and you composed yourself to address yourself to the music and you began to sing, this was an inspirational moment that I've taken with me in my life, throughout my life. The way in which you gave yourself to the music, it was just one of the most wonderful things that one could ever see. And I want to thank you for
thank
that.
You.
I also want
That's
to tell you
kind.
That one night at the Montreal Symphony, there was a promotion for one of your records, and there was a life-size cutout of you. And my wife and her friend, who was a French-Canadian, whose name happened to be Carmen, I said, I'd really love to have that cutout. And they stole it. And I
so you've lived with Jesse Norman in the house, life size.
I had it in my office. I taught English in a college, and I had it in my office for years. And the students would walk into my office, and there was, I'm 5 foot five, and there was you, bigger than I was, in the corner. And I just loved that. For years,
great.
I had that with me. So you've been with me throughout my life, literally.
Martin, it's a wonderful story. Thank
That's
you so much.
That's a beautiful story.
Thank you
Thank
so
you
much.
Thank you for sharing that with us. How marvelous.
Jesse, given the heights you've been to, take us back just a little to what it was like in Augusta, Georgia, growing up. You describe Jim Crow very much still being in effect. Your parents, great inspiration to you in so many ways, but very clear in describing to you the dangers of the world out there.
Of course.
What was that like?
Well, it was a wonderful thing in that my parents understood that it was necessary for us to know what was happening and what segregation entailed, but at the same time to give us a sense of ourselves and a sense of our worth in the world. And they said practically on a daily basis that you are as good as anyone on this earth. Mm. We're all created by God. And you might have to work a bit harder to prove that you are just as clever, just as intelligent, just as eager to do a job properly. But that's the way it is at the moment. Mm. Don't let that be something that is a cross for you to have to bear. Keep your eye on the prize. Mm. And the prize is showing your best self at all times.
But the signs were right there. Whites only, coleds only. This was not abstract in your childhood.
It was not abstract at all. You had whites only over a water fountain. Mm-hmm. And I would go to the water fountain and turn on the water and say to my mother, but look, it's only water. Why do we have to have two different places from which we can drink? And I, of course, in my child's mind, thought that it was a ridiculous idea, this thing of segregation. And it wasn't a child's mind that was thinking that. That was a more mature mind than I realized. Because it is and continues to be throughout the world, this business of racism, that we would separate ourselves from a person because of their color, because of their creed, because of their belief, because of whom they love. Why must we forever find ways to separate ourselves one from the other? Instead of learning to live on this planet together, in comfort for everybody, there's enough room for all of us. Why can't we simply accept that and go on about our business of loving our neighbors?
That is a very good question. We'd like to think that slowly, perhaps, we're answering it. Slowly, perhaps, we're getting around it. What do you think?
I hope so. I live in hope that one of these days, that these things that are happening at the moment, these social and political things, this with people in our legislature wanting to roll back voting rights and all the rest of it, we have to come to our senses at some point. These rights have been hard won. And to think that there would be people sitting there that would say, well, let's take away those voting rights. Let's see if we can't make it more difficult for people to get to the polls. Let's see if we can't think of reasons to have identification that it would be difficult for some people to get to make sure that they won't be able to exercise this franchise. It is something that I find completely wrong. It is completely despicable. We should be better than that. We should be bigger than that. We should be more loving and understanding than that.
There's a reason that the NAACP has honored Jesse Norman with its highest prize. You can hear it right there in her view. Opera great Jesse Norman joins us from New York. Her new memoir is Stand Up Straight and Sing. Just a little more music. This is from Wagner. Jesse Norman writes, Wagner sits at the virtual center of her operatic repertoire. Here she is singing Schmerzen, or Torment, from Wagner's Wesendonck-Lieder. Jesse Norman with her beloved Wagner. Paige in Columbia, Tennessee. Paige, you're on the air with Jesse Norman.
Okay, can you hear me?
Yes, we can, Paige. Thank you for calling.
Okay, I heard Miss Jesse many years ago in Nashville, and she sang an all Wagnerian program.
She sure did.
Forget it. She ended with an immolation scene. I wonder if she remembers that.
I certainly do, absolutely. And what a wonderful audience you all were.
I had a three martini supper. And by the time you sang the immolation scene, I was in a weaving way. And that music was as pretty as anything this side of heaven.
bless
and
you.
We were determined you were going to do an encore. And we kept saying, one more, Jesse, one more, Jesse. And you smiled the sweetest smile at me. And of all things, you sang My Heart Is Thy Sweet Voice. But it was beautiful.
Oh, Paige.
I'll never forget it.
Paige, bless you. You take us right there. I'm so grateful for your call, Paige. And let me get one more because it's from Jesse Norman's hometown, Augusta, Georgia. Ellis, you're on the air. Our time is short, Ellis, but you're on.
I am.
Yes, sir. You're on the air.
Hello, Ellis.
Hi. Are you?
I'm wonderful. Well, how lovely that you're on the air.
Yes, I'm here in Augusta, and all of Augusta is very, very excited about the new book.
Thank you.
We are just waiting for your arrival in Augusta, and we are wondering when you will come and do your launching here in Augusta.
Bring
well,
the book
home. I'll
be
there at the time of our benefit for the school on the 24th of August. I'll certainly be there, and we will arrange something around that time. And I will be back in Augusta for the Literary Festival on the 7th of November. So we will have two occasions where we can talk about the
wonderful.
Book.
I just want to say that having attended the same school that you attended, the same high school, Delaney High School, I certainly can identify with the people, the places, the things, and the events that you mention in your memoirs.
Of course.
And can really attest to the truth of what you're writing. It's just so rewarding to see how you reflected upon all of the times that you experienced during your life here in Augusta.
Thank you.
Makes our heart very glad. And Augusta, as I said from the very beginning, is very excited about this new book.
Oh,
and,
Ellis.
Many people in this area have already purchased the book, and I'm reading it and about to finish it now and just delighted about it.
That's wonderful.
Thank you, Ellis.
Our time is short, but thank you so much. It's great to hear from Augusta today, hometown of Jesse Norman. And, of course, your school there, the Jesse Norman School of the Arts for young and poor kids and more to embrace the arts in a time when that's not easily done. We're out of time, but we wish good luck to you in that school, in its work, in your work, and we're grateful for all that you've shared here, Jesse Norman. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me. It's been a pleasure.
Such a pleasure. The new memoir is Stand Up Straight and Sing, Jesse Norman's life story. Here's a little bit of West Side Story, Somewhere. Of course, Leonard Bernstein, 1957. Our thanks to Jesse Norman for joining us today and to all of you listeners sharing your experience with her and her song. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.